Let's first of all say a big welcome to Ian Dark.
Good morning to you, Clive.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us. We appreciate you coming in. I know you have a pretty hectic schedule. What's been in the diary for this week?
Well, it isn't that hectic.
Isn't it?
For once, just at the moment. No, I was lucky enough to cover the World Cup. Since I got back from that, I've been enjoying Christmas and a bit of time with my family. And of course, the Premier League started again, but I've only had to do one game over the holiday period, and that was Crystal Palace against Fulham. So, put my feet up for a little while.
Well, actually, I think you deserve a rest after the World Cup. How did you find it while we're talking? While we're there, but let's start with the World Cup, shall we?
Well, I mean, I think it was a very good World Cup. I think the final, Argentina against France, was probably the best World Cup final ever in terms of sporting theatre and drama. I mean, just about everything you could want in a match was happening in that game. But, obviously it was a controversial choice, Qatar, to stage the World Cup. But just speaking personally, leaving aside the politics and whether the event should have ever have been there, probably not. It was very easy to work because all the stadiums were within about 30 minutes of our hotel. So we were back having a meal in our hotel about an hour after every game we did.
Brilliant. Maybe that's a good blueprint for future World Cups.
Well, don't say that. Don't give FIFA ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. So how many games did you end up commentating on?
I think I did 13 in the end. Nearly every day during the group stage. That's mad for all the commentators because basically you're just preparing a game, travelling to the game, commentating on the game, coming back to the hotel and doing the same thing again the next day. So there's no real time for sightseeing or anything like that. It's just work all the way. But it's not real work, is it, watching football?
Absolutely. Yeah. I know what you mean. So you did a bit of preparation before you went out there. But, of course, every match, the circumstances change, players get injured, and some of your research has to keep on being tweaked.
Yeah, you have to keep updating it as the tournament goes on, obviously. But, yeah, I did a lot. I won't lie to you. It is a mountain of preparation. There are 32 teams.
Yeah.
I knew that I wasn't going to be covering some of them, but I was going to be covering, I think I probably covered half of them.
Really?
So, you know, that's 26 players in each squad. So that's a lot of research to get through. And you've got to look at tapes of those teams. So when you're watching those teams, you know who the players are, because 95% of what we do as commentators is identifying the players.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, you're basically lost.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of the research that you did, maybe you never actually even covered that team during the World Cup.
Well, we'll say that, yeah. I mean, you've got all these notes when you go to a game with a lot of detail, but you know it's a bad game if you've used even 25% of that stuff, because you hope really that, I mean, I think young commentators, when they start out, probably make the mistake of saying, look, I've done all this homework and I'm going to show you I've done all this homework. And basically, I think the viewers, listeners, whatever, radio, TV, they don't want to hear that.
No.
They want to watch the game, and you should be, I always think, like a good guest in their living room, not somebody droning on with a lot of boring stats in the corner.
Because you've done radio as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
So what's the difference between technique between doing radio commentary and TV?
It's huge, really, because I think, you know, in radio, you're the eyes and ears of the listeners. So you've got to tell them all the time where the ball is geographically, as well as who's got the ball, and use your voice to give the sense of danger of a goal, that kind of thing. On the TV, everybody can see what's going on. So the job there is more like adding to the pictures. You're still doing the identification, but and we're lucky enough now to have like ex-England internationals. You know, Steve McManaman, I work with Glenn Hoddle, I'm lucky enough to work with, you know, guys who've played the game at the top level. So I always say to them, tell us something only a professional who played the game at your level could see that the viewers can't. So they can add to it if they do it right.
I'll probably talk for the rest of the programme about Glenn Hoddle. He was my favourite ever player to watch. But going back to the radio commentary description, I seem to remember reading a long time ago that when radio commentary first started, they divided the pitch up into grids, and the commentator would say, it was like battleships.
Yeah.
It was the ball was now in A1 or C6 or something like that.
That's right. So they put this in the Radio Times every week. apparently, like this little grid, so you could sit with your Radio Times in front of you and plot where the ball was. So it was never going to catch on, I don't think, long term.
Yeah, I think they probably...
It sounded more like a kind of a thing you'd do at algebra at school, I think, by the end.
So how long were you broadcasting on radio for, doing match?
Oh, well, I did local radio at Leicester. For a few years, right at the start of my career, that was like the grounding. Then I did national radio with the BBC, what is now Five Live. It was Radio 2 then, so that tells you how old I am. So Sport on 2 and Sports Report. I worked with some great broadcasters that I'd listened to when I was young. So that was quite awesome, really, to sit alongside them. And I felt pretty intimidated doing that. And then I was lucky enough to get some work in television, so that's what I did for the later part of my career.
So how did they get you going on in Radio Leicester? Did you do sort of local football, or was it straight in at the deep end?
I did mostly news when I went to Radio Leicester, so I did a lot of news reporting, so that meant reading the news. And that was the first broadcasting, really, that I'd ever done. So I was as nervous could be reading it. Not helped one day, because we had to go down from the 9th floor to the 8th floor of this building to do the news. And we were always rushing against deadline, because there was always some last-minute piece of item we wanted to get in. And I was rushing down the stairs one day, and I fell. I cut myself quite badly, and I remember reading the news with blood dripping all over the script. Goodness. You know, by the end, it looked like there'd been a murder scene there.
That was a news item in itself. So from Radio Leicester, it was then into London, was it?
Yeah, I worked. I worked in the sports room with, you know, Desmond Lynham, Jim Rosenthal, sort of people like that were there. Gerald Williams, Ian Robertson, the famous rugby commentator, Mike Ingham, Peter Brackley. So it was an education, but it was a hard school. It really was a hard school. When they asked you for a 50-second football report, they meant 50 seconds. If you did 51, you got hauled in on the Monday morning and said, well, if everybody did 51 seconds, we'd have to drop two items from the programme by the end. So make sure when we ask you for 50, it's 50. And by the way, why did you lead on that? No, so there was a lot of that going on. But I tell you what, it didn't half make you really pay great attention to the detail. And they weren't going to accept just any level either. They wanted it good.
You learned really quickly.
You hope you learned quickly. I mean, I was lucky to work there, really. You're lucky to get a job there.
Absolutely. So was the reason that you got pulled into the sports area because of your you had a passion for football, and how did you get the job in the first place?
Yeah, I started in my later days at Leicester. I started to do a bit more sport, and I'd always listened to Sports Report, so it was like a dream for me to listen to that famous 5 o'clock show.
They were threatening to drop that music for a while last year, weren't they, at some stage?
Well, they dropped the football results, haven't they, this season, which I think is madness, personally. I can never make sense of that. There was a time when they threatened to drop the music, but of course there was an outcry, so it's going to carry on, I think, for the rest of time. It's a song called Out of the Blue, and that has been the title music for Sports Report since 1948, when the programme first went to air.
Brilliant. So did you play football or much sports when you were younger?
Yeah, I've always loved football, still do. Still love football and still get a chance to play the walking football, of course. But yeah, I played from when I was, first thing I can remember is playing football, really, with my brothers. And then I played for my school when I was 7. On the right wing down in Portsmouth. We used to play in there was a proper, well-organised for a school league. So then, I've always played. I played proper football, to call it that, till I was 46. So I've been in an ardent love affair with the game. It's I always wanted to be a player. I wasn't good enough to be a player. So I guess commentating is the next best thing.
Yeah, brilliant. So you were right wing all that time, or?
Converted when I was a teenager to central midfield, because I used to be quite quick when I was very small, but I wasn't quite as quick when I filled out a little.
So you played till you were 46. Did you ever imagine that you'd get back to playing again?
No, I mean, you know, we're going to talk about walking football. I mean, you play Clive.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I love it.
You know, we're going to be joined by Gail, I think, in a while. You know, she plays as well, so it's mixed. And, you know, I bet people are listening to this and thinking, walking football, you can't do that, can you? But it is growing. So I'm told there are now 60,000 players. Wow. Playing this game in England. It's played in 53 countries across the planet. That's growing. And the health benefits are huge. I mean, a lot of studies have shown it improves your body strength, your mental health, your core stability, keeps your weight down, reduces stress. So it's a great thing to do. And of course, you know, who of us would really go out running at our sort of age? But if you're running and there's a ball involved, or if you're out exercising with a ball, so... We all thought we'd retired from playing. Yeah. We get out there two or three times a week, yeah, some of us, and carry on. It's like, you know, it's like a comeback, isn't it, really? We're like a retread.
Yeah. Well, Radio Way had a hand starting up the walking football in Staines back in 2014. And this guy's still playing, but he plays at the back and he just sort of is shouting, get on him, mark him, get forward. And he's ordering everybody about. And I'm thinking, I know he won't mind me saying he must be in his mid-70s to, you know, late 70s. But what he was like as a player must have been incredible.
Well, old habits die hard. Yeah. I mean, you see that every week, Clive. I mean, it's supposed to be no contact and very safe, a much safer way of playing the game. But I think everybody who did play played when they were a little bit younger. So there's always a little bit of an edge, isn't there?
There is. I think we'll try and bring in Gail in a few minutes' time. But how do you find the time to come along? Because obviously there's two or three sessions a week. But do you sort of think, oh, look, I'm going to be able to go this week and come along and enjoy it?
Yeah, I play kind of whatever sessions I can fit in. So if I'm doing a Champions League game on a Wednesday, I can't play that day, but I can play the Thursday morning if I can get back in time. So yeah, just you can always make time, and I'm in the habit of making time to play walking football.
And still playing right wing?
No, not playing right. Well, we all have to play everywhere now, don't we? It's six aside, so we can't afford the luxury of just having out-and-out wingers, I don't think.
Yeah, you end up all over the place, don't you? Yeah. Wherever the space is, you kind of try and find it. So,
what's your position, Clive?
Well, I started at right back when I was in Scouts and Cubs, and I wasn't very good at it. I wasn't very fast. I wasn't able to tackle very much, and... I found out because I had a heart condition, but I didn't know that. You know, like Patrice Moamba.
Yeah.
But I didn't know about that until I was like 38. Right. So, and I played for a team called Feltham Garrison, but I always found that I was having to keep stopping and taking a breather, and I used to get a bit of stick. Come on. But I sort of migrated into midfield. And then I started watching Glenn Hoddle play, and I thought, okay, well, this is, I couldn't tackle, I wasn't fast, but I could pick out a pass. And I started watching Glenn, and that's why I kind of identified with his style of play, because I used to go to, I was a Spurs season ticket holder for a few years, but I used to go there just for the warm-ups.
Great player.
Yeah.
Only won 53 caps. He should have won 153.
I know. They built the team around Platini for France, didn't they? And you just think, Ron Greenwood and it was Don Howe a lot of the time, they didn't pick him, played him out of position, or I think he played them these were good players like Peter With or Paul Mariner, who weren't that quick, whereas at Spurs he had Crooks, Archibald and Galvin, who had pace about them, and Glenn knew that he could find them.
Yeah.
But
Glenn always says, I would have loved to play on today's pitches.
Yeah.
You know, when he was playing, they were mud heaps, weren't they, for most of the season. So imagine now on these surfaces that are like billiard tables.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't it when he was England manager, there were some of the players sort of going, oh my God, I'm watching him sort of practicing with them, and they just sort of felt, not intimidated, it's not the right word, but
I think they did feel a bit intimidated, yeah, if I'm honest, because he could still do all the things that he used to do except run quite as hard, because he'd got past that stage. But he was a glorious player. He could make the ball talk, really.
Yeah. Oh, well, as I said, I'll probably talk about him for quite some time, but we better move on. So I'm going to play first one. I'm trying to get in touch with Gail. I'm going to play a piece of music that you've picked out. So would you like to tell us about it, please, Ian?
Well, you sprung this on me this morning when I arrived to pick an album track out. So one track I never tire of listening to, and it's from the mid-60s, from a French lady called Françoise Hardy. I think it's a beautiful, haunting melody, and it's called All Over the World.
Thank you. You're listening to the Album Archive with me, Clive Stevens, and Ian Dark is with us in the studios. And on the line now, we're joined by Gail Pettifer. Hi, Gail.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're all good. So
we've
touched on walking football, and you come along to walking football as well.
I do indeed. I came along at the age of 60, not ever having played football before in my life.
Well, that was one of my questions, so I'm going to cross that one out already. So you'd never played football, and you still came along. Brilliant.
Unlike Ian, who's been playing since the age of, I think he said 7, didn't he? But yeah, I've never played before. I was 60. I started off by playing walking netball, and there was approached by our leader of the pack, Mark Blythe, to say that they were starting Chelsea Ladies. Chelsea Foundation was starting a Chelsea Ladies. Were we interested, some of our netballers, in taking part? And I thought, oh, I've never played football. What, me? Walking football. So I gave it a go, and I have never looked back. I recommend it to everybody.
And Gail gets better every week, don't you, Gail? Gail's switched from the right wing to central defence now. She's controlling the game from the back.
Absolutely. I was in the same team as Helen, as Gail last week, and her and Helen up front. They're a lethal partnership.
So like you, Ian, I started off on the right wing, didn't I? But, I seem to have moved to quite light defence. Depends on the team, I think. If there's a lot of attackers and strikers, I think, I'll move back and try a bit of defending. I've quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, and we've got a few of our women players who've made the England team from the Walton Centre, haven't we?
Yes, indeed. We had the opportunity of trialling for England, and amazingly, I was picked, and I was in the development squad. Picked for the development squad. I think it's got a lot of developing to do, but I was very honoured to have been chosen. But sadly, I can't commit to the training because it's all around the country. So I've pulled myself out of that for the time being. But who knows what the future might hold? I might, you know, go back into it again.
So what made you stick with it, Gail? What really appealed to you? What made you keep coming back week in, week out?
Walking football, it's wonderful for so many. I've made so many friends since joining, and to be able to play now with the men as well as the ladies. It started off just ladies, and then we were invited to join in with the men's games. It's so good for your mental health. You come off the pitch smiling. Well, on the pitch, you're smiling, laughing. It doesn't matter how you play. Nobody judges you. You can be of any ability, and it doesn't matter. There's always going to be those guys that they've got all the skills. Men, they've played from a very young age. Some of the ladies as well played, you know, other games when they were younger. But for me, it was coming in cold, not knowing even how to kick a ball. And it's just the fact that you're so included. It doesn't matter what your ability is. Everybody is there for the same reason, to have fun, to get fit. And there's loads of friendships been made. I think Ian will say the same.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Gail describes it perfectly. Mm. It's a really good laugh every week as well. And yeah, there aren't any big inquests. Nobody's going to be dropped for the next game or anything like that. we'll always come back. And we even do on a Friday. We have a little sports quiz as well, and sometimes eat a couple of biscuits and cakes while we're doing it. So there's the weight. Put back on straight away.
Well, it is a great community, isn't it? I mean, it's one of the biggest clubs in the country, isn't it? Walton Walking Football. Somebody told me last week, maybe the second or third largest group in the country.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, there's lots of teams. There's currently, I'm told, Mark Blythe, who Gail mentioned there, who's our kind of like our supremo, who leads us and lays down the rules. If it ever gets too serious, he says, OK, come on, cool it, lads. Yeah, it's great. There's 9 England teams, I think 9 age group teams, and Walton's got a very thriving setup based at the Excel.
And
one of our wonderful things that happened was we were able to play at Stamford Bridge actually on the hallowed turf at the end of the season last year. We had the opportunity. I think there were 8 teams that took part, and we played against each other, and we all came through the tunnel. There were replica trophies. It was a fantastic morning. We were given this opportunity that, wow, how amazing was that? Did you go, Ian, or not?
No, I didn't play in that, actually.
No,
I didn't. I didn't play. I'm surprised Chelsea didn't sign you after that, Gail.
What an experience for us, though. It was amazing. It was incredible. We've been given so many opportunities. I can't believe it. In the 5 years I've been playing, I just cannot believe the opportunities we've been given. We have been so lucky. And I recommend anybody to give it a go. Whoever you are, even if you've never kicked a ball before like I hadn't, just go out there and give it a go. You have got nothing to lose at all. It's just the best thing ever that I ever did.
Well, if anyone listening is interested, there is a website for Walton Walking Football. The sessions are held mainly at the Excel Centre in Walton. They have sessions on Monday mornings, Monday evenings, Thursday mornings.
Friday morning.
And Friday morning. Well,
Friday morning's quite a good one to start with, I'd say. Wouldn't you, Gail?
Yeah, I definitely would agree. The Friday morning, 11 to 12 is a quiz, and 12 to 1 is the football with Fulham Foundation,
So just turn up. I mean, the sessions cost £5, I think.
Yeah, you can go to there's a Fulham Walking Football sort of website, or I think it's called Fulham Football Schools.
Yeah.
If you want to go onto it, and you can enrol and just turn up. You'll be very welcome. And as Gail said, you'll make some fast friends, I think.
Definitely. There's so many people that and there's some real characters as well there, and lots of people with lots of different life experiences from all backgrounds, and there's some very interesting characters out there as well. And the numbers that turn up, I mean, some weeks we have 3 matches going on, so that's 6 different teams of 7, 8, sometimes even more people on each side, so that it's very, very well supported.
We've even got Les Barrett, haven't we, who played in the FA Cup final for Fulham in 1975. So... There's one or two ex-players who played at the top level as well. So there's a whole range of ability.
Yeah, and also players that have had injuries and can no longer play. I know there's one or two guys there who are a bit younger in their maybe late 40s, early 50s, who had to stop playing, but can do so again because it's walking football.
Yeah, and we've got one guy who plays with this guy called Dave, he's quite seriously ill, isn't he, really, Gail? And he comes, I mean, he's so brave. He comes and plays it every Friday, and he loves it. It's the highlight of his week, and we love him as well.
Mm. Yeah.
We've had people with dementia as well, haven't we? We've had people with Parkinson's. We've had people with, recovering from heart problems, or like yourself, Clive. But, we've had all sorts of come along, and you play to your ability. It doesn't matter, however you want to play, you can play as you wish. And this guy who comes on a Friday morning who has problems, he's got skills there, hasn't he? He's still got his skills despite his illness. He still has many great skills, I think, in his time. He's probably a very good footballer.
Okay, so I'm going to spring this one on you now. So let's have a session of Keepy Uppy with the rules. Okay, because there are a few little rules, maybe half a dozen, and we'll probably discover rules that we didn't know existed between the three of us. So, ladies first, Gail, tell us one of the rules we have for walking football.
No running.
Excellent start, no running. Some people take that to the extremes, and they've got a very good technique at borderline walking running, but that's the first one. Ian?
One foot on the ground at all times.
Yes, 1 foot on the ground at all times. But, yeah, you're only allowed 3 touches of the ball at any one time.
I've got no contact, so technically you're not supposed to push or shove. Or I mean, accidents happen and people bump into each other. But, yeah, that's very important to try and avoid injury because that's the last thing.
No tackling from behind.
Oh, yeah, that's another one ticked off. Well done.
Ball can't go above head height.
Head height, and is it head height or crossbar or both?
It's no, head height.
It's head height.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's it? Is it me?
It's you.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh yes. There's a line that grows across the pitch, and you can only score inside this. It's an extended penalty area, really, at each end. So there's no long range shooting, which can obviously can be quite painful if you get in the way. I'm beginning to run out now.
What about you get a blue card? If we have a little league that goes on between the local clubs, and you get a blue card and a couple of minutes in the sin bin for repeated offences, otherwise hitting the ball above head height, contact, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I played in one tournament. I only played in 2 games. I got injured. I couldn't believe it. But from what I could make out, if there was 4 offences given against one team, then the other team gets a penalty.
That's right. You get a penalty.
Yeah
in the league. Yeah, if there are 4 blue card offences, then it's a penalty to the other side. I mean, we've won and lost matches in that fashion.
Okay, so that makes you think about the rules even more. I think we've done and dusted. Can you think of any more, Gail? I think we've covered it.
We've got the. I think people have got the basic idea.
Yes. Yeah. So, if you're worried about getting barged over or the tackling or the contact side of it, you don't have to. The 3 touches make sure that one person doesn't run with the ball from one end of the pitch to the other. So it's all very inclusive. It makes it a really enjoyable time. So one thing from each of you about walking football that you've taken from playing the game. Which really sort of makes you smile and has improved your life.
Yeah, I think it's the friendships that's been made and the fact that through lockdown, Chelsea were very good to us in so much that they provided us with footballs and cones, and they actually did Zooms with us, Zoom where we could partake in our own lounges of kicking the ball around during lockdown. That's why they showed us skills, which was amazing to be able to keep on going through Zoom. And just, I think that was lovely because you got to know people a little bit better through that as well. And I just think friendships have been made and the fun that you have, basically. I can't emphasise the fun. You don't take it seriously, really.
Okay.
It doesn't matter who wins. You come off that pitch having a good time.
Yeah, I'd agree with everything Gail says there, really. But just the fun of being able to play football again with a ball at your feet when you thought it had all gone.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, we're going to chat a little bit more with Ian. So much to talk to Ian about. Gail, now I asked you to pick out a piece of music as well. I've been a little bit naughty, but tell us what you picked.
So I picked "You'll Never Walk Alone." As with walking football, I feel you'll never walk alone. All the friends that you've got, and you can always turn to somebody. You know there's somebody there. I just think it's a lovely piece. That's my tune.
Perfect choice, perfect words. Thanks very much for joining us today, Gail.
Yeah, and cheers, Gail. See you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Indeed.
Get your shooting boots on.
I can't wait to get back on there.
I say I've been a bit naughty. I've picked a cover version, and I'll see if you can identify the 2 singers on this version of "You'll Never Walk Alone," which, of course, was by Jerry and the Pacemakers. Thanks a lot, Gail.
A pleasure. Bye, Ian.
Bye. Cheers, Gail.
Bye.
Cheers, Gail.
Bye-bye.
Listen local, listen live, listen live, listen now. Radio Way.
Welcome back, and Ian, did you work out who the 2 vocalists were that were on that track?
I really didn't. It sounded a bit like Cilla Black.
It was. Well done.
Didn't know the other
one. The other one wasn't quite so clear, but it was Barry Manilow.
Oh, really?
It was recorded in 1993 for a Cilla Black album. So
that's an unlikely combination, isn't it?
Yeah, I do like unearthing those on this programme. And, I hope you enjoyed that
version. It's from Carousel, the musical, isn't it?
Very good. Well, that was the other little stat. I had a stat here to come out. It was first performed in 1945.
Wow. I love Carousel.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it once. It's really good.
Gonna have to watch that. They had Singing in the Rain the other day, didn't they, on the TV? That's tremendous as well. Right, we digress. Let's get back with Ian's amazing broadcasting career. So you've worked for BBC and Sky and ESPN.
Yes, in America.
In America. How did that come about?
Interesting. I was hired by ESPN to do the 2010 World Cup, because they were going to do it big, so they needed a lot of commentary teams. So I got hired, and I ended up covering the USA's matches. And there was a goal that they scored right at the end of the group, which took them from bottom of the group and going out of the World Cup to go through as group leaders into the next round. And it was kind of like a light bulb moment for the game in America. Millions of people kind of latched on to this, and I got so much reaction to my commentary on that moment in America. The ESPN hired me. It was one of the only time in my career where I got actually headhunted. And I said, no, I don't think I can go and... they said, well, you don't have to move to America. You just cover the Premier League from England, for American TV. So they kept on offering me more money to do that. So in the end, I did. So I've had a liaison with them ever since. And to be fair, they've been great to work for.
And apparently they've made up a chant for you. Is that right? In the crowd?
I'm not aware of it, but I'm told some of the fans did based on... So one of the phrases I came out with at this kind of... It sounds mad now, and I'm a believer that commentary clips are only really to be heard in the moment that they happen, because they only make sense in the moment they happen. You hear them later, and they sound like the commentator's lost the plot and has gone off the Richter scale. So I went off the Richter scale a bit with that, because that goal was so dramatic. Last kick of the game to keep you in the World Cup. Yeah. And somewhere in the middle of it, I said, go, go, USA. And this became a sort of a little bit of a catchphrase.
Well, and also, the chant, there's a chant apparently that goes, Ian Dark, you are a Yank.
Well, I'm not. But I have developed a soft spot for the United States team, and I was glad they did quite well again.
Yeah, they did.
World Cup, and they're beginning, I think, to show. They've got a lot of American players now playing, in the Champions League. So the game is getting bigger and bigger over there, and of course they're going to be hosting the next World Cup along with Canada and Mexico.
Looking forward to that one. So I've done quite a number of commentaries for non-league clubs, and obviously you've done street small commentaries. Can we go through maybe?
Yeah, but it's harder doing commentary on non-league clubs because you've got to really. It's a harder work getting the stuff on the players.
Yes, it is, and it isn't, because I used to follow Staines Town before their sad demise, thanks to one particular person. But anyway, I want to go into that. So you didn't really have to do much homework because you knew the players. And you knew their history. It's the visiting team.
Visiting team.
Yeah. So I normally got the little notes that appears in the programme beforehand, and some of the names you recognise and some of them you didn't. Mm. But the beauty with an away team, if Staines Town were playing, I don't know, Boreham Wood, people listening in Ashford and St Peter's Hospital may not know that I've just... wouldn't know that...
But you've got your pride. You want to get it right, don't you?
Absolutely.
If they score after 1 minute of the game, you want to identify the goal scorer.
The right name. So... Yeah. But some grounds that you've really loved looking forward to going to, and maybe some that not so keen on, maybe the facilities or the commentary position, or maybe an incident that you came across that was slightly amusing.
Well, I've been lucky enough, because I've covered a few World Cups, to commentate in what you'd call citadels of world football, like the Bernabeu and the Maracanã in Rio. Oh, they did the 2014 World Cup final there. So... That is something to say that you've done. All the grounds, the Barcelona's Camp Nou now stadium is getting a bit decrepit. They need the new stadium now, but it is It is a real theatre there with 100,000 people in there. I did a game in there when Barcelona, and this is one of the best games I ever covered, they lost the first leg of a Champions League game, 4-0 to Paris Saint-Germain. They're playing the second leg. They're 3-1 up, but now need 3 goals in 6 minutes to go through.
Mm.
And they get the 3 goals in the last 6 minutes.
Wow.
So that was an incredible night. And I remember going outside and the Barcelona fans, I couldn't really, don't speak much Spanish, but we gave up trying to get back to the hotel. It was so crazy out there. And we just sat down, me and Steve McManaman, who, by the way, played for Real Madrid. Loved him too, apparently. So we just sat there drinking beers with Barcelona fans till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, my partner's daughter lives out in a part of London where there's a lot of Moroccans. And she said streets there after their victories, she said the atmosphere and the fireworks and the celebrations were absolutely incredible.
Well, that was fantastic, wasn't it? The run that they had, I think that was great for world football, because the World Cup's only ever been won by a European or South American nation. It was again in the end here. But what a run. No country from Africa had ever got to the semi-finals. And they were great, Morocco. They deserved to be there. It wasn't a freak.
Yeah. Well, they just kept on reproducing the same sort of form each game, didn't they? Okay, so Grays Athletic, I did a game there, and we were plonked right next to a dugout. I can't remember the reasons why, and I was dreading it because, you know, the language that comes from the dugouts can be pretty ripe. These guys were as good as gold.
They
were as good as gold.
Well, did you tell them before?
I knew we were there.
You're going to go on the radio.
I could have stuck my head around the corner and just said, hello, you know.
So it would have gone on air.
It would have gone on air.
If they'd have sworn, as they would frequently have done, of course.
And they brought us a cup of tea and a Kit Kat at half time. We didn't even ask. So that was great.
Well, hats off to Grays Athletic.
Absolutely. And then Woking, I think it was an FA Cup match away at Coventry, and we just got to the ground and the game was called off because of fog.
Yeah.
And we thought, let's go and get a cup of tea because we'd battled through all the traffic, and the guy that was looking after the tea refreshments had turned the urn off and gone home.
Mm.
So that was you know, from non-league, great hospitality. We got to Coventry. I'm sure it's all changed now, but we got to Coventry. I can't believe it. We had another two-hour journey.
The most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me covering sport wasn't football, or boxing. I did a bit of that as well. They sent me to Wimbledon one day. I wasn't commentating. I was just doing, you know, some features in the background, but we'd run out of commentators and reporters, and Jimmy Connors, who was defending champion I think that year, was playing out on sort of court 14 or somewhere, and was two sets down to some guy ranked very lowly in the world and playing awfully. So they sent me out with a radio microphone and standing among the crowd and not very far from the players. It's like at Wimbledon. You know, this is the old days before there were commentary towers all around the place. So I'm standing amid the crowd and I'm doing this report and I'm trying to keep my voice down and whisper and go, you know, Jimmy Connors has really lost all his rhythm here, that it's incredible what's going on here. He's two sets down and a service breakdown to the man ranked number 271 in the world from Romania. And unless he changes quite quickly and picks up his form, we're going to have a sensation out here on court 15. Connors has been frankly awful. I looked up, everybody was looking at me. And Connors was bouncing the ball, waiting to serve, and shouted over to me, "Have you finished, buddy?" it was the most embarrassing moment.
Did it inspire him to win?
Well, that's the sequel. He went on to win, and later he was doing the press conference, and he said, one of the American reporters said, "Jimmy, you know what changed the game for you?" He said, I heard some idiot on the radio beside the court telling me how bad I was playing. And I guess looking back on it, he was right.
He should have given you a cut of his win, yeah?
He should have done.
So you briefly mentioned boxing. So I didn't know about your boxing experiences. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, I covered boxing for radio and TV. And boxing was the first sport I actually did commentaries on. I did a lot of football reporting, but the first sport I commentated on was boxing, and I largely got the job. Desmond Lynham used to be the BBC radio commentator on boxing before he became the big television star that he became. So he left to go to television, and I was there at radio, and they said, well, have a go at it. So the very first fight I covered They sent me to cover Muhammad Ali in America, in Las Vegas, fighting Larry Holmes. So basically, it was all downhill after that, really. You know, it was a terrible, sad, it was a very sad occasion because Ali got basically beaten up at the end of his career. You know, what happened to him subsequently, I don't think, you know, what happened that night didn't help. But yeah, I covered, you know, people like Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis and Marvin Hagler and Chris Eubank and Nigel Benn. So I used to do boxing and football commentaries sort of simultaneously.
Brilliant. And you mentioned, I noticed that you did the commentary where Tyson bit off Holyfield's ear.
Yeah, they called it the bite of the century, that fight, inevitably. I couldn't believe he did that in a ring. You know, I was doing the commentary. Did that really happen? What I just see happen? So I did it like a double check mentally before saying it. So, yeah, and of course he was disqualified.
Mm. Did they ever find it?
Yeah, well, the sequel to that is, yes, they did find the bit of the ear, and the bit of that ear is in some kind of saline solution Evander Holyfield's desk in front of him, bizarrely.
I thought you might have found it and you got it home in formaldehyde.
Well, it'd be worth a lot, wouldn't it? It'd be like that Hand of God Diego Maradona shirt that Steve Hodge, the England player, picked up from Maradona at the end of the game, and it's now worth about £7 million.
Yes. Yeah. So you don't do the boxing anymore? Or?
No, I don't do boxing anymore. I haven't done boxing for a few years now, and I'm getting too old to be trying to keep abreast of two sports, and the football's got so busy.
And
I've got to get the walking football in as well, Clive.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. So you got much on over the period of January, I guess so. Got a number of commentaries and much travelling to do?
Yeah, I don't know all the games I'll have to cover yet, but I'll probably do, a couple of Premier League games. And I'm covering something called the Spanish Super Cup, which is the thing they have every year. Barcelona and Real Madrid are in it, a couple of the other clubs as well. So that should be quite good. That'll be on BT Sport. Am I allowed to plug BT Sport here on Radio
Wave?
Yeah,
that's fine, yeah. I just better not tell you about the times when we used to do commentaries in the 90s and we had two former BT engineers on our books, and the things that they did to get us a telephone line before the days of mobile phones, to get a telephone line here to the studio. So, yeah, I think they'd be in big trouble these days. But I better not mention
that.
And
not all the commentary positions that you'd have worked at, Clive, would be that good, would they? They'd be quite low. It's not easy to work from, and we're kind of spoilt a bit.
Some of them are brilliant. Salisbury's got a brilliant commentary position. Tea and Cakes just off the boardroom as well. Yeah, Salisbury. But Croydon Athletic, I think we were sitting on an athletics track. It was one of those grounds that went round the football pitch, and that was that was easy to commentate on because Staines won something like 13-2. So that made it a bit easier to commentate on because they were the only team that
had a lot of goal scorers to identify.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Ian. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'll have to do it again sometime. But
my pleasure, Crockline.
If anybody wants to do Walking Football, studio@radioway.org or check out Walking Football Walton. Thanks very much, Ian.
Cheers, Clive.